You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
I mean, it's been a discussion in the Discord.
Oh, really? People are talking in the Discord?
Yeah. And obviously the fact that the famous cousin Katie and Ben both went out and got it as well without us specifically saying that we were going out and getting
it. Oh, yeah. She brought it up separately.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it is.
Oh, it's a topic of conversation.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy because I'm like, why did this not exist beforehand?
It's a fair question. I don't have an answer for you.
Okay. Well, I mean, I just feel like
we may have gotten into that already.
It's worth talking about, I guess is what I'm saying.
That's why
we need to be covering important sandwich news during the search.
That's why we'll have already talked about this by the time you listen to this.
Is this good bonus content? Not sure if we need to have this as bonus content.
All right.
I mean, you can, I don't care.
You're just going to play a little...
Yeah, I'm pretty busy over here. I got to watch Tayo the Little Boss on YouTube. Can we pretend that airplanes in the night sky are like shooting stars? You know how famous that guy B.O.B. probably thought he was going to be? So are we just not going to mention Tavor this week?
I'll just mention we're taking the week off from Tavor. They'll be back next week.
Is your show Swoop Story is not very good, right?
It's not really that interesting, but now multiple people have requested it, so I got to tell it.
Who?
Natalie, Ben, and Evan.
Evan who?
Scrimshaw.
Oh, all right.
That's three, the listener. That's like one third of our audience. Hello and welcome to episode number 170 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
Hello!
Hello.
Episode 170. Who's that?
The Michael Sinclair edition?
Oh, I've been waiting for the Michael Sinclair edition.
I didn't even open the spreadsheet, so I could be wrong about that.
Your spreadsheet of Seattle sports numbers?
Yeah. I mean, you got to have a spreadsheet. You don't have a spreadsheet of Seattle sports numbers? I assume just everyone did that.
My spreadsheet is Renton specific.
Okay. It's just Dominic Green, yeah. Jason Hamilton,
Zach LaVine,
Joe Tryon.
I would say it's an extensive list.
Okay.
There are many of us.
There are dozens of us. It is, in fact, the Michael Sinclair
edition. There we go.
Of the Pelton Cast, as usual. We've got a lot to get to this week, so let's start out with our beer. We're taking a week off from our beer sponsor, Tavor. They'll be back next week because of the fact that some of us were late in emailing them about the fact that we were out of beer.
Yes.
Don't want to name any names
here. Get better next time.
Instead, we have Pyramid Curveball. Do you want to say anything about this? You purchased it.
It's August. Baseball's heating up. We are heading into the stretch run, almost at September baseball, and it's time for a curveball, baby.
Wow.
Yeah, baseball's heating up in Seattle. It's all anybody can talk about.
We're gonna literally discuss the Mariners this week.
Wow.
It's happening.
I think there's a toast
coming to the Mariners with this curveball.
That's why we got the curveball. It was preemptive for this toast.
Yeah, you knew that what was gonna happen was gonna happen because you can see the future. And that future.
They don't call me Nostra Tristan for nothing.
They really kind of do call you Nostra Tristan for nothing in many ways.
First of all, how dare you? You're going to maybe want to use two hands for that?
Yeah, I probably
that's because you're going to get... There was about to be beer everywhere.
Still might be.
I just saved your life. Okay.
I got some really good audio there.
Your success at opening that bottle reminds me of this Mariners 2019 season. So we have a number of toasts to get to. But first, story time.
So the other day on Twitter, there was a thing going around that I saw about what was your greatest sports achievement. This is by Heath Cummings. Of a fantasy sports writer for CBS Sports tweeted this out, and I saw it. Tell me your greatest athletic sports achievements, no matter how small. And of course, I went with the time that Cheryl Swoopes picked me for her squad in pickup basketball.
Okay.
And third Pelton brother Natalie Weiner was like, I need to know this story. So I figured I'd tell it on the pod. Is we got three the listener wanted to hear it. Literally threes of listeners of the listener wanted to hear it. So the season after Cheryl Swoopes played for the Storm in 2008 was after the sale of the team and the move of the Sonics to Oklahoma City. The Storm staff moved into the Furtado Center, the old practice facility for the Sonics and Storm, taking over the offices that were vacated by the Sonics coaching staff and front office. And so we were there for about 6 months, and we were, of course, right there with the two full NBA, WNBA courts that were used for practices. So there was a lot of pickup basketball that got played that winter. And at one point, Cheryl Swoopes came back. She was in town to do the Nutcracker, to appear as the grandmother in the Nutcracker, which is the role that they give to like various celebrities. Uh-huh.
Ironically, it was her greatest acting achievement as well.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like she probably acted as herself in something at some point. So I go to cover her appearance in the Nutcracker and go to the dressing room where she's getting made up to look like an old woman. And she says to me, so I hear you've been really strong on the glass in these pickup games.
Wait, this story is actually slightly better than I remember it being. She said that to you in the green room at the Nutcracker?
Yeah.
That you were strong on the glass in the pickup basketball games?
Yeah.
Wow.
She had heard the rumors.
Somebody else was out there talking about it.
I mean, there's probably only one person who would have been talking to them, but that's
it's like
that
a
person.
Western. She's like, your reputation precedes you.
And it, of course, it's rebounding because you look at me as a 5'9" person. You're like, that guy's a great rebounder. So she then later that week came out to play pickup hoops and was like, I want you on my team.
Wow.
And so the team was, I don't remember the other two people, but me, her son Jordan, who I believe went on to play at Texas Tech. I should have checked that before telling this story. And Cheryl Swoopes.
Jordan Swoopes. I'm thinking of Tyrone Swoopes.
His last name is not Swoopes, as a matter of fact. It's his father's name. Yeah.
Did you win?
Who was 11 at the time, by the way, her son. So he was not that good at that point. I do not remember whether we won. I remember nothing else about this evening besides the fact that it snowed. But the fact that I played with Cheryl Swoopes.
If there's one thing that you remember almost as much as 90s sporting events, it's times it snowed.
Oh, I mean, it's always notable any time that it snows. It doesn't snow that
You're
often.
You're playing?
I mean, that was the start of Snowpocalypse.
Cheryl Swoopes is in the WNBA Hall of Fame. Is there a specific, or is it just the Basketball Hall of Fame?
There's a Women's Basketball Hall of Fame.
Is Cheryl Swoopes in it?
Yeah.
You were playing with a Hall of Famer.
An MVP. I mean,
an MVP in basketball.
One of the GOATs.
The most important thing that you remember about the night was that it snowed.
That's not the most important thing I remember the night. I don't remember.
That's what stands out to you.
I don't remember the specifics of the action on the court.
It snows typically multiple times in a winter. How often do you play with WNBA MVPs? You've never even played a Sue Bird, right?
No, Sue at one point we thought she might come out because she was around at that point as well.
She hadn't heard about your reputation.
I guess not, no. So I've never played basketball with Sue Bird. I've only done trivia with Sue Bird, as we've discussed on the podcast.
Oh, God. Your reputation at trivia probably does precede you.
I don't know if it should or it shouldn't.
Wait, aren't you? You're pretty good at trivia.
I'm not bad at trivia.
I was thinking of my greatest sports achievement. And unfortunately, my greatest sports achievement was also something that you achieved. And it was when we played baseball. A group of my friends, who and now current coworker, would play in a game every summer called the Summer Classic, a baseball game.
I only think I played the one time.
It was a ramshackle baseball game. Usually ended up in a fight. There were all sorts of there were different skill levels and emotions and levels of seriousness that the game was undertaken.
Yep.
And when playing in that game, what is the play field in Upper Queen Anne?
Oh, I don't remember the name.
We were playing at probably, I would say it's like 150 feet to dead center. Does that seem right?
Seems reasonable.
So anyway, I cracked a dinger during that game, and just walking around the bases when you hit an out of the park home run, like there's literally no better feeling than that. But you also hit a home run in the game, so that made it worse.
West Queen Anne Playfield.
West Queen Anne Playfield, baby.
That's another thing I had forgotten that I hit.
You know,
a home
they
run
call
that
it sometimes the house that the Peltons built.
Do you think I can use Google Maps to estimate the distance to center field here if I get the satellite going?
It was probably the longest that I've ever hit a baseball, and it happened while other people were there in what was sort of a semi-competitive game. And that there's a fence. It was a unique situation that there's an actual fence for the ball to go over.
That might have been 200 feet.
There we go. I cracked that ball 200 feet.
Actually, no, probably not. That's, you know, you're probably, your first estimate was probably right. It is probably 150 feet. So those do look like 60-foot base paths and not 90-foot, because there's a much bigger baseball field next door.
Anyway, I was notable in my athletic career for having never won an intramural sporting event.
That's true. That was a long period of time that you went without it.
I still don't know if I ever won an intramural sporting event. Every time,
so that, like, was, you played soccer in college, right?
I played soccer in college.
There was our basketball team in the Puget Sound Basketball League, which mm-hmm. was very bad and was most memorable for you nearly getting ejected for mm-hmm. a flagrant foul.
And Cheryl Swoops out there.
Well, yeah, that would have been a very different situation if we had Cheryl Swoops. There was, you played a couple of times with our lunch YMCA basketball team at the Sonics.
Mm-hmm. Also got into a fight. I've been in a lot more fights in intramural sporting events than I have victories.
You played,
but also I played a season of football. Flag football, uh-huh. intramural flag football.
You guys never won a game?
Never won a game.
My flag football teams weren't bad.
Well, the co-ed team, which I didn't really play on, but Katie played on, they went to the playoffs and were quite good. I practiced with them, but I don't think I ever actually played.
You came to at least one Sonic softball game, mm-hmm. right?
Lost.
Yeah, well, we only won one game that year. I had the game-winning run. I think I had the game-winning run that time.
It's really strange that you have all these impressive sports achievements.
I mean, that's not really that impressive of a sports achievement. I just happened to be on base at the end of the game.
An intramural game.
Although I have a three-time co-ed softball champion with the Storm.
There you go.
Retired. I went out on top after our three-peat.
I would not know how to act in that situation because I've literally never won a game before.
Well, act like you've been there before.
I also played on an indoor soccer team for about 10 matches. Uh-huh. Never won.
Wow. Have you started to consider that it might be you?
I started to.
Okay.
I started at it's me, and I never went away from that. It's kind of incredible, right?
Yeah, it's quite incredible.
Yeah, I almost don't want to participate in anything else because I don't want to break the streak of losing.
I mean, but isn't it an even better story if you get to talk about you finally won a game all these years later?
There was a Pelton cast that we talked about while I was playing intramural soccer, and the ball was, or not intramural, indoor soccer, and the ball was crossed to me perfectly, and I completely whiffed on the ball.
That sounds right.
So anyway, in the spirit of losing, what I'm trying to say is that's why we're drinking Pyramid Curveball.
Well, so we do have an optimistic Mariners toast this week because Kyle Seager on Tuesday became the 11th player in Mariners history to hit at least 3 home runs in a game in their win over the Detroit Tigers.
There we go. The shift don't matter when you hit it out of the park.
I can't wait until you see the highlight of the third home run. It's what very happened? Memorable.
Okay.
It was off of an outfielder.
Oh.
Outfielder's glove.
Jose Canseco style?
Not off the head, I don't think. It was off the glove. All right. Two outfielders collided, and it went off of them and out of the park for this third home run of the night.
Well.
Like, how amazing is that?
Cheers to Kyle Seager for that.
All right. Also a toast. We got a toast to third Pelton brother, Mina Kimes, our dear friend, who made her debut in the broadcast booth.
Notable trader. You hate to see it.
As the Rams took on, I forget who they were playing in that
one. Football team.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter. This Saturday, though, she will be on NFL Network as the Rams face the Cowboys.
Oh, really?
In Hawaii.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, she got a trip to Hawaii out of this
she
also?
Did, yeah. Dang. I mean, that's the most exciting part by far. Like, sure, being a part of a broadcast crew, also including Seahawks legend and Renton legend, I should say.
Yeah.
Nate Burleson.
He's on the list.
Yeah.
Wait, so Nate Burleson and Mina Kimes are on the Rams preseason crew?
Yeah.
Man. Have you seen their offense?
They only score 3 points every game. Anyway, toast to Mina. That's really awesome for her. So exciting. And it just is shameful that it's with an NFC West rival.
Maybe Mina Kimes isn't a traitor.
In sadder news from the NFL preseason, Jermaine Kearse suffered a broken leg and associated ankle injuries in his preseason debut for the Lions, ending his season before it began. A tough day last Thursday for hashtag Kearse crew.
Yeah, it was tough because the Seahawks also obviously played on Thursday, and they kept showing his touchdown in the NFC Championship to send the Seahawks to their second consecutive Super Bowl. And this was right after the news of his injury happened. And I mean, if we're being honest, this was probably Jermaine Curse's last game that he plays.
It seems quite possible. I mean, he's not that old, but, you know, was already, you know, a late free agent signing this year.
I mean, his chances of making the Lions were not 100%.
Weren't they?
I mean, I doubt it if he was being signed that late. You think?
I think he was pretty likely to make the roster from what I read about, like, the problem his injury has created.
Oh, really? For the Lions?
Yeah, they have to figure out who's going to fill that spot.
Golden Tate's not out there anymore.
Well, oh, Golden Tate. We're
he's playing with the best quarterback he's ever played with, Daniel Jones.
Daniel Jones looked good last Thursday, man. And then on a much sadder note, we're pouring one out this week for Seattle basketball figure Jim Marsh, who died Monday at age 73. Marsh was drafted by the Sonics in the 11th round of the 1968 NBA draft out of USC. Although he never played for the Sonics, he played briefly for the Blazers in his only NBA action. He later returned to Seattle as the Sonics color analyst and coached the impactful Friends of Hoop AAU team, which has developed 8 NBA players: John Brockman, Jamal Crawford, Joe Harris, Spencer Hawes, Zach LaVine, Nate Robinson, Isaiah Thomas, and Martell Webster. Marsh was a fixture in the Seattle basketball community. Saw him all the time at Husky games, Sonic games before that, when the team was here. And he will, leaves a tremendous legacy in terms of, you know, his role in developing Seattle into a basketball hotbed. And he will tremendously be missed. All right, well, tough to segue from that into talking about the third annual Pelton Cast live show coming up this Friday. September 6th at Pelton Yacht Club. Well, we'll talk about what's coming up this Friday. Doors at 7 p.m. Tickets are available now for $10, with 50% of proceeds going to the Family First Center in Renton, spearheaded by Doug Baldwin. Of course, the special guest third Pelton brother, as you know, will be Ben Baldwin of the Athletic Seattle.
Oh!
But first, this Friday, Tasteful Profanities Live Pod.
Wow.
At Fuel Sports and Sports Bar in Pioneer Square. We will be there as part of the show, along with Domum Bedlam, Evan Hill, your fellow Tyee High School alum, Stacey Ross of ESPN
and
Seattle.
And Michael Sawyer will be in the house as well.
Will he?
It's basically a Tyee High School reunion.
Alex Coffey of the Athletic Seattle, Will Cornell, and many, many more. And why not you?
Wow. All right. Well, I mean, the summer of live Seattle sports podcast continues. 2 out of 3 is happening this week. People are flying in from throughout the country for this event. Very excited to be part of it. You can see us there talking about Husky football, Husky basketball, maybe the Storm. Who knows what else? I'm excited about surprises. And you know what to expect from the PeltonCast Live September 6th at Belltown Yacht Club. Come hungry. Tickets are available.
Apparently very hungry. If I saw your request for food that you put in, your appetite.
We moved from providing a couple of people burgers to like 3-course meals. It's basically like a Lions Club event. Like it's a potluck.
It's not a potluck. Potluck, you're bringing the food.
Yeah, no.
We're
I mean,
bringing everyone the food.
I have to say, $10 is a steal.
It's true.
You're getting your money's worth for this. The cost of goods alone. Just you could not guess what types of businesses will be giving us food. Search for the NBA Seattle update presented by Pagliacci. But you know what to expect from Pelton Cast Live. There are going to be surprises. This is your chance to heckle Ben Baldwin live in person.
But Friday, we're very excited about your chance to heckle Evan in person over his food tanks.
Oh, God.
I think there's going to be a lot of that.
Where can people get tickets? We're both pointing at each other. Where can people get tickets to Pelton Cast Live?
If you go to @BeastPod on Twitter, of course, it's on there. I also have put a link.
No, I'm saying for PeltonCast Live.
Oh.
Where can we get those tickets?
At PeltonCast on Twitter or the
PeltonCast website. Do we have a pin tweet? Talked about this?
Yeah.
Every week.
Yeah.
Wow. Don't unpin that tweet.
I mean, it would be weird if I did now.
And then also @BeastPod on Twitter. They've been promoting it heavily.
We've been retweeting it.
So we will see everybody there on Friday. I'm excited. This will be my first time meeting a lot of these people.
Yeah, because you never go to any of the live podcasts involving
Seahawks Twitter. Two events, as if I'm like notoriously not there.
You are notoriously not there. The other last bit of business this week, this is our last call. If you want to play PeltonCast Fantasy Football this year, email us at peltoncast@gmail.com if you're interested in playing. And by the start of next week, we'll start setting up dates and times for the drafts. It's coming up here.
I'll tell you what, because I'm cool, I've been doing a lot of research about fantasy football.
You really want to reclaim that fantasy genius title.
You know what I mean? Like I found that I had to compete that much harder.
I'm good. I mean, this is supposed to be forcing you to take it up a notch.
The losses these last 2 years have really made me take a deep look at myself and think about how hard I was competing. And honestly, I got lazy.
Yeah.
So this year I bought a fantasy football magazine. I'm listening to fantasy football podcasts. Just for the rest of the league that I end up in, watch yourself.
The listener Jimmer said that if he wins the league again, defending champion Jimmer, I'd like to be known as Fantasy Genius with a J, Jimmer.
Fantasy Genius.
So that's the stakes here. There's Fantasy Genius labels on the line.
I'm willing to agree to it.
That's a much bigger deal than any financial reward. Should we turn to our search for Seattle's best sandwich?
Absolutely.
So we didn't get, we'll talk about this again. This is hypothetically the last week of the quote-unquote regular season in our search for Seattle's best sandwiches before you turn our attention to the playoffs.
Okay.
A little more on that to come. But a place that you had wanted to get to for an extended period of time here that we hadn't gotten out to, even though it's the single closest location to me. Mm-hmm.
Your basement.
Or no, I guess it's not, because we did Semitas Poblanos. Subway. That's probably quite South slightly Park. Closer.
Wait, what's closer?
Semitas Poblanos.
Oh.
Colozzi's Cheesesteaks in Georgetown, which is run by Al Colozzi, a Philadelphia native who moved to Seattle. He started it in 2008 as a late-night street cart, and then opened the brick-and-mortar location in Georgetown near Boeing Field in 2012.
So have you ever been there before?
I had. I went one time, yeah. I would say I've been looking for a cheesesteak spot. Like Philly Fever used to be the go-to back in the Sonics days.
If only you had a podcast that did a search for certain types of foods.
It would be great. I mean, Tats obviously serves them. I will never order a cheesesteak at Tats because I've had the Tats Dravi and I'm good.
Yeah, chicken parm all the way.
No, never again. You know, fool me once. I've done King's Cheesesteaks. By Rainier Beach High School, that was pretty good, but just haven't had that one spot. So, Colozzi's was worth another try from that standpoint.
Okay, so what did you think after going back? Will this become your Philly cheesesteak spot?
So the positive here, it's an ample amount of meat.
Are there usually Philly cheesesteaks where you're just like, not enough meat?
Fair, but there's an ample amount here. You don't agree with that take?
No, I mean, I do agree with that take, but I think that's kind of par for the course for Philly cheesesteaks.
Fine. The bread is really good, I think.
Uh-huh.
Not enough whiz. Needed more whiz. Really? I don't know how you felt about this.
I thought the whiz was fine, honestly. I mean, I guess I could always do with more whiz, but it wasn't... You were saying there are some bites that were just meat instead of meat plus whiz.
Yes.
Okay.
I need, and it dried out a little bit.
Okay.
That's why you need the whiz for, you know, a little bit of balance.
Okay.
Overall, a good experience. I would say not a great experience.
Really?
Yeah, you thought it was great?
I absolutely think it's great.
It's going to be funny when we give this the same rating.
I mean, I guess I just like cheesesteaks also. The meat's delicious. Yeah. There's cheese whiz. There's onions. Like, what is there not to like? There's soft, warm bread.
Well, there wasn't onions for me, but yeah.
Like, this is... It's the perfect package. This is what sandwiches should be.
So you think this is Seattle's best sandwich?
I mean, I don't think it's Seattle's best sandwich because it's not that far off from the Tatsdrami, and the Tatsdrami is just better, right? Like, the sauce... They don't have... Like, the Russian dressing, like you were talking about, the Russian dressing permeates through every bite.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And so, like, just, it's not, I wouldn't fault the Colozzi cheesesteak because of that, though. Because if there was Russian dressing on a Colozzi's cheesesteak, that'd be fucking weird. So
yeah,
like it's more of a criticism of the art form of cheesesteak, if anything. But maybe they needed a little bit more whiz.
That's what I felt.
And I mean, if that's the only thing that we're detracting from them, then I think that's a pretty good review.
I mean, I rated it a 90.
I think it's a 92.
Interesting.
I mean, the thing is, like, I don't think it's a real competitor for Seattle's Best Sandwich because there's nothing that's that unique about it in any way. It's just a good cheesesteak.
Right.
And it kind of feels like, you know, the other locations you're talking about, it's probably not that different from those cheesesteaks.
No.
Now, I'm going to Philadelphia in September, and I've never had a cheesesteak in Philadelphia.
Nor have I. I mean, neither of us have been to Philadelphia, so it'd be hard to do.
So anyway, I'm going to be posted up there, leaning against the Liberty Bell, eating a Philadelphia cheesesteak.
You're going to be wearing your sweats like Rocky.
I'm going to be, yeah. I'm going to be an extra on It's Always Sunny. I'm going to be the eating a cheesesteak in the background guy.
That's a good extra to be.
So, I mean, I'll see how different this cheesesteak is from that one. And, like, honestly, that might reframe how I feel about this cheesesteak.
But for right now, we've got this. That's solidly in the top 10 sandwiches, I think.
No, it's just a good sandwich. You know, I don't think it should necessarily make the playoff bracket. But, like, will I go there again? Of course I will.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. Anytime if I'm in Georgetown and I'm like, I need food fast, I feel like this is near the top of the list.
Okay, so speaking of the playoff bracket, we were scheduled this week originally to do the ultimate Paseo versus Unbien challenge, which it turns out, by the way, has been done frequently online.
But we didn't invent this. We've invented a lot of things. We invented searches. We invented brackets.
We didn't invent this one. But I don't know that anyone has done it as a blind taste test.
Oh, hello.
And that's what we need to do to really take the hype out of it.
Fast forward to October when Seattle Times is like, blind taste test, Unbien versus Paseo.
And just be going off the quality of the sandwich. So here's what we're going to do instead, because this, as I mentioned, is the last week of the regular season. In the playoffs, the bracket has to begin next week if we're going to get to our finals for our search for Seattle's Best Sandwich on September 6th at Taltoncast Live.
What if we just don't?
Yeah, we just skip it. So what we're going to have to do...
I mean, we're not going to have any sandwiches at the event. Spoiler alert.
We are not. Is do Paseo, unless someone wants to provide sandwiches, let us know.
We only have a shitload of food already, but you know.
But we could scale back some of the orders. Paseo versus Unbien is going to be a play-in matchup.
Okay.
And so effectively what we're going to do is have three sandwiches competing next week. We'll do Paseo versus Unbien, and the winner of that faces the other thing. So my question for you as we go through this, should we make the Paseo Unbien winner the 4 seed in the bracket or the 3 seed?
4 seed.
Okay, so the 4 seed means they will be taking on
Maono?
Tats.
Oh, wow. Because
Maono has already advanced to the final. They're not part of the bracket.
It's a complicated bracket.
It's like the West Coast Conference used to be.
Did they just advance Gonzaga to the final?
You take the 1 seed all the way to the final, yeah.
This is like pre-wild card baseball playoffs.
Something like that. It's like you've won the first half of the season, and then there's a complicated tiebreak to figure out who wins the second half of the split season.
We are making up rules so on the fly. There are various commissioners who are extremely impressed with us right now.
Yes.
Steve Bettman wishes that he had this kind of power.
So next week, a three-way showdown, Paseo, Unbien, and Tats.
Oh my God.
That's some heavy hitters. So, and that means so the other side of the bracket.
We're going to do the winner of Paseo versus Unbien. We're going to know who wins it?
Yes, we'll have to do that first and then go to the other one.
Okay.
And then go to Tats.
And then have the winner of that. So we should have Katie be the third Pelton brother for the Unbien versus Paseo contest.
It does seem to make sense to bring in the famous cousin Katie for this
task. And then Katie needs to awkwardly go to her car or order a Diet Coke right in a plastic bottle and creepily eat the Tats in the car.
That is correct.
Yes. Okay. Understood.
So that means the other side of the bracket will be Salumi against the other coast.
Wow.
I mean, these are heavy hitters.
Oh, Salumi versus the other coast.
Is the other semifinal.
And then the winner of that will take on the winner of the Unbien Paseo.
Tats.
Versus Tats.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, these are big names. Like, we're getting down to it in our search for Seattle's Best Sandwich.
Also should be noted that you tried to go to Saigon Deli this week.
That's true.
The Saigon Deli.
Well, I looked it up on Yelp, and it said temporarily closed. So, unfortunately, it does not appear we're going to be able to review them within the context of our search for Seattle's best sandwich.
Ugh. All right. Well, I'm fired up about these sandwiches.
I'm very excited. But there's one other sandwich we need to talk about.
Okay.
And that's the Popeyes chicken sandwich. Oh. Because I only have one rule.
Wow.
And that's if Popeyes unveils a chicken sandwich, well, during the summer where we are talking about sandwiches, we must immediately go out and review it.
That's, you've actually had that rule for a long time, and now it became appropriate.
Long-standing rule. Even before we were doing brackets, I had that rule.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of excitement out there about the Popeyes chicken sandwich. In addition to both of us going to get it today, so did the famous cousin Gary. Unrelated to the fact that we were going to discuss it on the pod. She was just that excited about
this.
It
is important sandwich news. It's especially important chicken sandwich news.
So on Monday, they announced that it was rolling out nationwide, although that's taking longer in some locations than others.
Oh, no.
Friend of the pod, Eden Liu, mentioned on Twitter that she went to Popeyes to try to get the chicken sandwich and was told they did not yet have it.
Doesn't she live in Louisiana?
No, she lives in Arkansas.
Still very close.
Relatively close. She's off. Louisiana was the test market. They already had it.
A hell of a lot closer to Louisiana than Seattle, Washington is.
I guess it's the bigger markets have gotten it immediately. So thank goodness to be in Seattle. It's
like another reason not to live in Arkansas.
Dave Letterman was always like the, when a movie was playing in selected cities, he was always like, I just pray that your city has been selected. We have for the immediate rollout of the Popeyes chicken sandwich. So we both had this today. What were your first thoughts? You've paused dramatically.
Put me into that fish tube and send me right to Popeyes for that chicken sandwich because it is excellent.
It's really quite good.
It is the best fast food chicken sandwich I've ever had.
Wow. See, I wasn't willing to go that far based on one sandwich. I feel like I need to try it more frequently. But it was definitely to me in the conversation with In-N-Out of States. They start making chicken sandwiches. Oh, man, the tags are going to be hot. Chick-fil-A.
It's like eating a Chick-fil-A sandwich. A, it's bigger.
It is.
It's maybe significantly bigger.
I think quite possibly so.
Than Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A, it's like eating a Chick-fil-A sandwich without the guilt. Because 50% of...
We probably shouldn't look too closely into Popeye's ownership structure.
But still, it's not Chick-fil-A.
It's not.
Right? You can still get Popeyes on a Sunday.
That is accurate.
50% of food is the taste of food, and the other 50% is the feeling you get from that food. So Chick-fil-A gives you the 50% for the food part and a zero on the feeling you get from it. Popeyes gives you a perfect 100.
Okay. Wow. Perfect 100.
Well, not maybe not. Maybe a solid 75.
So my main takeaway here was, like, the challenge to me of the fast food chicken sandwich is making sure that the chicken breast is cooked ideally so that it doesn't dry out.
Yes.
But it's fully cooked. Mm-hmm. Chick-fil-A has mastered that over a long period of time.
I do think that the peanut oil that they use definitely helps. They use an oil that, like, permeates throughout the chicken, and it's just like, it's almost like it drips when you eat it.
But Popeyes has come... If they haven't replicated it, they've come awful damn close.
It was not dry at all. No. And there's very little sauce in the sandwich.
I mean, mine had even...
Not spicy? Because there's a spicy and an original.
Wow. How dare you?
You got the spicy.
I got the spicy?
Because you knew you could handle Popeye spice.
I mean, it was probably greater than Chick-fil-A spice.
Was it really?
I think a little bit.
I would describe the spice level of each as right around zero.
More than zero, but there was like maybe a bite or two where I was like, oh, that's a little bit of a kick.
I went and looked up who owned Popeyes after this, and I was pretty convinced that it was white people when I tasted the spice level.
Well, that's at least to the catering. There's been a lot of talk about the brioche bun. I felt like that was maybe a little overrated. The bun kind of looked like soggy. I mean, it was perfectly solid. It was not detracting from anything. I just didn't think it was a notable bun. But I like the sauce on there. It was good. Nice compliment.
Hint of sauce. Did you pull the pickles off? Or do you eat the pickles in these sandwiches?
Well, of course I pulled the pickles
off. Okay, well, I was right about one thing judgmentally about you.
Yeah.
The pickles are nice. I mean, you know, look, we're not talking about daikon pickles here, but like they're nice pickles. They're thick cut. They taste good. The sauce was minor, but tasted good. Really, the chicken is what really matters. And it's perfectly crispy on the outside and flavorful on the inside. And that's all you need.
I would definitely eat it again.
And notice that it was a chicken breast sandwich. And I have a message for all the people out there on the internet.
Oh, no.
Who might have said that I didn't know what a chicken thigh was, or that I've never seen a chicken before.
You can't see, the listener can't see the air quotes that are going on here.
And my message to you out there who said that, you're totally right.
Oh, no.
No, it's just like, in a chicken sandwich, the breast is the preferred meat. I'm not saying all chicken thighs bad. I'm just saying,
you might have said that.
I may have said that it was a trash meat.
I don't see how that could be misconstrued.
But I'm fine with the thigh. I prefer in a chicken sandwich, I prefer the chicken breast.
Yeah.
Right? Better in a chicken sandwich. You agree with me about this.
I agree on a sandwich, it's better.
But and I
when
learned,
you're just grilling it up at home, then you want the chicken thigh.
I was in Kauai last week, and I was like, what are these birds that are everywhere? And somebody told me, that's a chicken.
Oh.
And I was like, wow. Okay.
The really crazy thing about the story is you weren't in Kauai last week.
Anyway, I would, every time I go, I've never gone to Popeyes and been like, wow, that experience sucked. You know?
Yeah.
Why is it that KFC is the sort of like signature chicken fast food place when literally their food is bad?
I don't agree that KFC is bad. I enjoy KFC. I enjoy pretty much any fast food chicken.
Do you?
Yeah.
Like if I eat just like a piece of KFC.
Pretty much any chicken that's not Safeway, fried chicken that's not Safeway fried chicken, which I just had too much as a child. It's just like not quite good enough. So I have negative associations, especially eating it cold at a picnic like hours later.
I'm not going to tell you about Albertson's fried chicken.
Yeah, okay. That's going to fall into the same category.
But KFC just like is not.
I mean, the thing about fried chicken is fried chicken's very good.
KFC is the Subway of fried chicken to me.
That's probably reasonable.
And Popeyes is the Jersey Mike's of fried chicken. But like,
can't be the Jimmy John's?
I guess so.
There was definitely not consensus about Jimmy John's online, by the way.
I mean, did we think that there was going to be?
I was a little surprised by the text.
But Popeyes is just good every time I go there. The biscuits are so buttery. It's crunchy on the outside. They literally taste like butter. And then soft and warm on the inside. They're incredible.
I do wonder about if you buy a biscuit and then place the chicken on there, how that would work out.
I mean, it's a lot smaller.
It is true.
So I think that'd be tough to do. You'd have to break off a piece of the chicken.
Yes.
But at the same time, it would be incredible.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm not telling you not to do this. I'm just telling you don't put the entire sandwich onto a biscuit because then you're eating a lot of chicken that's not covered by bread. But what you could do is you could get yourself some mashed potatoes. They have Cajun-style mashed potatoes. They're a little spicy, a little flavorful.
You said that as if you were, like, informing me of it. I normally always go with the Cajun-style mashed potatoes as my side, but today I went with the red beans and rice on the recommendation of Joe House.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Red beans and rice from Popeyes?
Yeah.
How was that, by the way?
Solid. I've eaten a lot of red beans and rice for comparison, but you know.
I'm not really a beans person. But if you do that with the mashed potatoes, if you broke off a piece of your chicken from the chicken sandwich, I mean, you could probably just get strips at this point, but just get the damn chicken sandwich and eat it that way.
Okay.
And eat a biscuit on the side.
Fine.
Okay? It's excellent.
Should we talk about sports?
All right.
All right, let's start with our NBA update presented by our new sponsor, Poliachi.
Because Poliachi wants basketball to return to Seattle, and so do we.
Absolutely.
I thought you were going to say that part.
We're still working that one out.
You mentioned that Poliachi has a salumi pizza right now.
So they have a pizza using salumi meatballs, I believe.
Like meatballs?
Sliced. Yeah. I saw this on the website last week, and it was very exciting. Definitely need to go check that out.
I mean, really, that's just like
summer seasonal.
A lot of synergy. Can you go find that pizza? Because I want to hear more about this. That's a lot of synergy between what we're doing.
Oh, no,
here.
It may not be there anymore. It may have already left. They appear to be onto the pizza primo, which is good, but...
I think you may have dreamt about this.
I definitely did not dream about this.
You might have had sandwich and pizza fever dreams and dreamt the salumi pizza.
I very rarely have pizza fever dreams. Let's see. The salumi spicy spicy pepperoni remains a part of the menu, but no, this was definitely a seasonal option that has now moved on.
Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah, it's too late.
All right.
Well, this is let this be a lesson to us next time not to wait.
Okay. Sonia, if we're trying to say anything, don't wait to go to Poliachi. Go right now. Because that peach primo could be gone at any time. And if I recall, it's been a while since I've had that, but it's excellent. It's peach or pear?
Peach.
Peach.
Yeah, I remember having it before Bumbershoot.
Peach primo before Bumbershoot. Yeah. So they have it this time of year?
Yeah.
All right.
All right, our update this week. Mayor Jenny Durkin announced at last Saturday's Lenny Wilkins Foundation Gala in a video that a street parallel to the new arena at Seattle Center will be renamed Lenny Wilkins Way to honor the former Sonics player, coach, executive, and broadcaster who led the team to its only championship in 1979 as head coach. According to the Seattle Times, it is still yet to be determined which street will be named for Wilkins, though I would expect that the stretch of Thomas Street just south of the arena is the most likely candidate.
Uh-huh. They're going to have Gordie Howe Street first, Gretzky Street after that, and then Lenny Wilkins Street will be right after that.
It's going to be a little weird doing that in an arena where the NBA is not currently scheduled to play.
To have Lenny Wilkins Avenue, right?
It'd be like
Edgar Martinez Drive being on the other side of Safeco Field by CenturyLink.
This year was the final Wilkins Foundation Gala as he's stepping back to spend more time with his family at age 81. The foundation has benefited Odessa Brown Clinic in the Seattle Central District since Wilkins' playing days back in the early 1970s. So, I mean, a long track record of Lenny Wilkins helping the Seattle community.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right.
He's certainly done more than his share. If you want to learn more about Wilkins' role with the 1979 Sonics, of course, you can check out the two-part podcast series, special series I did on the 79 championship team back in June.
Where you interviewed the legend himself.
I did, yeah. That was a lot of fun.
He asked you questions about your rebounding abilities.
Yeah, you heard that. On to the Sounders, who got a 3-3 draw on Saturday versus New England, a thrilling match where they led 1-0 and 3-2 and also trailed 2-1.
You're just saying numbers now.
A match with wild back and forth play. They conceded 3 goals for the second week in a row. It was not clearly Nuhu's fault this time. I don't know if you could pick out any specific culprit from the back line in terms of the, you know, conceding all those goals. Sounders again controlled the game in terms of expected goals with a 3.4 to 2.1 advantage in the shot-based model, according to 538 Soccer Power Index, and a 2.9 to 1.8 advantage in the non-shot model. So it's tough to tell how much this is just bad luck that they're giving up all these goals the last few weeks as opposed to absolutely dreadful defense.
Wait, hold on. Do you hear that sound?
What's that?
That's the sound of Roman Torres' agent contacting the Sounders.
Wait, about what?
About how bad the defense has been without him. They've given up 3 goals in 2 consecutive games the second after Roman Torres was suspended.
I mean, I don't know that that's like getting suspended is a good thing here.
But clearly the defense is...
But I'm telling you
that... It's probably randomness, but we may have been underestimating his role back then.
Because they had been wildly outperforming their expected goals on defense basically for a full calendar year. Like the second half of the 2018 season, the first half of the 2019 season, expected goals kept saying, like, this defense is not actually this good. They're getting lucky. And then... No, it's the gambler's fallacy does not actually exist. It's a fallacy, but they're kind of like it's evening out here.
But could it be that maybe something about what Torres does is,
I mean,
doesn't show up expected goals wise?
I think this does show up much more to do with Chad Marshall than Roman Torres. Like the defense got much worse when Marshall retired, even when Torres was playing.
I'm sure it has to do with Chad Marshall.
Yeah,
he was good.
Yeah. They could also use Brad Smith back in the lineup. He's been banged up. Kelvin Leerdam also missed this game with a minor injury. So, you know, those guys will help. But, I mean, it's weird because, like, most of the game, the Sounders are just fine. But they just have these embarrassing gaffes defensively. And it's really frustrating as a fan. The Sounders, Did before last week's MLS transfer deal deadline complete deals a loan for Emmanuel Cecchariti that we spoke about at length for the Argentine midfielder, loan from Malaga in the Spanish second division, as well as a transfer deal for longtime MLS forward Luis Silva, who most recently was playing in Finland. Before that, Silva played for Real Salt Lake in 2015, 2017, and 2018, his second stint in Salt Lake. He had 5 goals in 19 matches in 2018. His career high is 11 goals in 2014. So he'll provide some depth for the Sounders up front, where you know they've lost Will Bruin for the remainder of the season. The Sounders also agreed to transfer away UW product Henry Wingo to a Norwegian side in a deal that will net them allocation money because he was signed as a homegrown prospect. The Sounders start a 3-game road trip on Wednesday at aforementioned Real Salt Lake. They actually moved up out of a tie for second place into second place all by themselves with the draw last week because both Minnesota and San Jose lost. But now they're just 2 points ahead of their next two opponents, Real Salt Lake and the LA Galaxy, who are tied for fifth in the Western Conference. So not a lot of separation.
Logjam there. In the second through five. I just want to say about Luis Silva, I think that the Sounders definitely needed a little more depth up front at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at their options near the end of matches of players right. who they can bring in, it's just like, wow.
I think that's going to be a big thing for him because Jordan Morris obviously can shift centrally. And by the way, one of the exciting things about last Saturday's match, despite the disappointment of the defense, was Jordan Morris moving back out to the wing with Rui Diaz back in the lineup. He was great again. Like, he's shown now the ability to be extremely effective both on the wing and as a central striker.
Jordan Morris is coming into his own.
Yeah.
But when you look at it and you're like, I mean, they've got Wingo and really nothing else.
They don't have Wingo. So
not Wingo. Harry Ship.
Well, in terms of forward depth?
Yeah.
I mean, he's playing on the wing as a midfielder.
Harry Ship?
Yeah. He had a couple goals last week.
So then who else is there?
I mean, it's Rui Diaz and Morris and then Justin Dillon, who they had called up from the Tacoma Defiance.
It's brutal.
It's, yeah.
Yeah.
Dillon actually held his own, you know, in the couple matches that he played during the international period. But
he's not a player who's played multiple MLS seasons.
No, I mean, you know, Silva is very experienced in the MLS. He's played 164 career matches. So,
right. Yeah,
you feel comfortable with him out there. The Sounders also announced on Tuesday changes to their ownership group. Founding partner and founding managing owner Joe Roth departed the group, and 11 local families are joining, headlined by Russell Wilson in Sierra, as well as McLemore and his wife Trisha. There's also heavy Microsoft ties in this group, including current CEO Satya Nadella and his wife Anu, and CFO Amy Hood and her husband Max. So
Satya Nadella is the CEO of Microsoft.
Yeah.
Could not have told you that name. Could you have?
Definitely didn't listen to that Bill Simmons podcast last week. Now, did you?
Oh, the tech one?
Yeah.
I did not listen to that one. They talked about Satya Nadella?
Not at length, but his name came up.
His name came up?
Yeah.
I could not have told you who the Microsoft CEO at the moment was.
He's not quite as famous as Steve Ballmer was, suffice it to say. So this is exciting, first of all, like increasing the local connections. And then also just kind of adding some wealth to the ownership group. I think that's going to be an important thing. Does
this notably add wealth to the ownership group?
Yes, it does.
And Joe Roth was not...
I mean, I don't know that much about his individual wealth, but I mean, you're talking about, you know, the CEO of Microsoft.
I mean, did you see that contract that Russell Wilson just signed? Highest paid quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah.
I would assume that the more famous members of the party are not going to be contributing the same kind of money in the same way.
They're probably smaller shares, yes.
Most importantly, though, from this announcement, Russell Wilson's hair.
I don't know when those photos were taken.
Today?
No, they were not taken today.
Recently?
They may have been taken recently. Unclear. But we've seen Russell Wilson. He's not like he's... I mean, like
Does in, his hair look like
in
that?
In hiding. He's currently playing football. I don't know if you're aware of this.
Well, he wears a helmet. I mean, it was pretty disorienting to see what was going on. Okay, so
he did look like he was going to fill in for Roman Torres at center back.
There's just a lot going on. So he has it pulled back on top, Pat Riley style, right?
Yeah.
Pulled back pretty tight.
Yeah.
Clearly, there's some male pattern baldness going on. The hairline's getting a little bit further. Then there's a ponytail. right? I don't
know if it's a full-on ponytail.
There's at least a bun of some kind in the straight back.
Yes.
And then he's kind of got the business down below, which is maybe the
Russell... The curls are spilling out.
The curls down below that. There's just... It's like Russell Wilson has three different hairstyles on his head all at once.
Yeah. Oh, it was interesting.
It's like it's a party in the front, a party in the back, and maybe a little bit of business down below.
I don't know how you're getting the business down below. I think it's the slicked back top that's the business.
You didn't see... That's the business?
Yeah.
Okay, so the business is on the top, the party is in the front, and then down below is just... I don't even know. The curls there. It is really something that Russell Wilson is working with there.
That was not the analysis I was expecting here.
Anyway, well, they added Brad Pitt's cousin to the ownership group.
That's a reference. All right. Reign FC, coming off a two-game winning streak, suffered a 3-1 home loss to the Utah Royals on Sunday. The Reign conceded twice in the second half after the match was tied at halftime. Dropped to fourth in the NWSL standings, 2 points ahead of the Royals. The Reign will now travel to face Sky Blue FC in New Jersey on Sunday. Still no indication of when Megan Rapinoe might return to action after the World Cup. Still nursing that Achilles soreness and, of course, you know, kind of the fatigue after the extended World Cup celebratory tour.
They could use Megan Rapinoe back soon.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful.
It feels like since the World Cup happened, Reign FC has not won a match.
No, they won two in a row recently.
Okay.
They had conquering World Cup returning hero Rosie White from New Zealand with the game-winning goals in both of those matches.
All right.
As usual, you not paying attention during that segment. The Seattle Storm, by contrast, though, after losing three in a row, a solid week, a 69-57 win at home on Thursday against Dallas playing up in Everett, and then an 84-69 win on Sunday at New York, kicking off a three-game road trip. Sammy Whitcomb moved back into the starting lineup for both of these games with Jewel Lloyd as she works back from injury coming off the bench. Whitcomb had a season-high 18 points at New York, storming back up to sixth in the WNBA standings, a half game back of Chicago for fifth, and 1.5 ahead of Minnesota in seventh. They'll wrap up the road trip this week with games at Washington, the best team in the league, and then, of course, the team they faced in last year's WNBA Finals, and then Friday at Connecticut, one of the league's other powers, before returning home on Sunday to face Minnesota. That'll be the start of a four-game homestand that will end their home schedule. Storm now 14-11 on the season. UW men's basketball beginning their trip to Italy this week. That's nothing really to report from that as yet. We'll see when they start playing some exhibition games. UW football, as they continue fall camp, also got a commitment from another four-star wide receiver adding to their 2020 recruiting class, Rome Odunze from Bishop Gorman High School in Las Vegas, which is better known for hoops, including producing UW sophomore Jamal Bay.
There we go.
He joins fellow four-star wide receiver Jalen McMillan, famously the best wide receiver prospect on the West Coast, which I guess means he's better. I assume means he's better than Odunze, but they're very similar. And then three-star recruit Sawyer Ring Racanelli in a jam-packed receiver recruiting class, which is necessary with Andre Bocelli, Aaron Fuller, Chico McClatcher, and Quentin Pounds all entering their senior seasons for the Huskies.
This class, though, I mean, Coach Pete is doing Coach Pete things.
And also a toast to Junior Adams in his first year as UW's receiver coach, who has played an integral role in putting together this recruiting class.
I'm feeling very good about this class.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap up with the Seahawks, who opened their preseason with a 22-14 win on Thursday against Denver. Strong second half of this one with Paxton Lynch at quarterback. What were your thoughts watching this game?
Geno Smith's bad.
I mean, let's not go too far in this. No, I mean, I think one piece of context that's important to remember is Geno Smith was playing generally against players higher on the depth chart than Paxton Lynch was.
You think it was that big of a difference?
I mean, by the end of the game, you're going pretty low in the opposing depth chart.
Just the difference between them seemed pretty massive.
Geno Smith's accuracy was not there, and that's always the concern with him.
It was tough because it was almost hard to gauge. You know, like DK had plays where he was open, And there was one pass that he probably should have caught, but it wasn't a great ball down the sideline on the left side of the field. And it was like...
That was the end of the first half, right?
It pretty much went through DK's hands. But at the same time, it was not like exactly where you would want the ball to be. So if that's... You know, star quarterbacks like Russell Wilson or Paxton Lynch throwing that pass. It might be. Don't we miss Alex Magoo?
No.
Since some of us are. It made it that much tougher to judge the receivers because of how inaccurate Geno Smith was.
I think that's fair. I mean, it certainly helped Jazz Ferguson shine in the second half. Smith also was playing with a cyst in his knee, underwent surgery after the game to remove it. Could be back for Sunday's preseason game at Minnesota, but I think that's unlikely. And the team signed JT Barrett to add QB depth, and Pete Carroll said on Tuesday that looks like Barrett, having taken Quickwit to the system, will get some action against the Vikings.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Is Russ going to play in this game? A little bit?
I think he probably will play a little bit.
Okay. I guess the main takeaways are, and this seems like throughout the NFL, it's interesting how the NFL just determines things. And I don't really understand why.
I mean, I think it's because of the fact that the teams that did it, what you're alluding to is the fact that quarterbacks in particular and just starters in general are playing so much less this year in the preseason.
I mean, do you think that the NFL is almost asking teams, like, here's a conspiracy theory?
No. My answer is no.
But I'm just going to throw this out there. The NFL wants to move to a two-game preseason.
That is right? Accurate.
And do you think that they're basically like, make the preseason as boring as possible so that people are completely uninterested in it. And then we can argue for, and they can just be like, look.
Roger Goodell is calling up Pete Carroll. He's like, hey, Pete, what's up? Can you not play Russell Wilson?
Okay, this is not, no, that's not what I'm arguing. Roger Goodell isn't doing this, but owners talk, right? Owners talk to each other. And what they do is they say, they're like, oh, I'm not going to play any of my starters this year in the preseason. And so one owner is like, you're not going to play any starters. Well, I'm not going to play any starters. And then it moves one by one throughout the league. And that person could be like the reason that they're not going to play any starters. Could be injuries, or it could be because they know that they're going to make X millions more by having two more regular season games instead of preseason games.
Or it could
honestly
be because
I'm for this. Or it could don't want any more preseason.
Or it could be because the Rams didn't play their starters almost at all last year, and then they went to the Super Bowl, and that's probably why.
Sure, maybe that. I'm just saying. They didn't play their starters almost at all in the preseason and went to the Super Bowl.
And then they only scored 3 points in the Super Bowl. So
I just love that that's the code that they cracked. Having this like modern offense, people were just like, it was obviously the fucking starters in the preseason. Had nothing to do with the offense they were running.
It's because they drafted a running back in the first round.
But the other thing is that there seems to be a trend throughout the league about everybody wants to throw to running backs more. And it really feels like sort of a like, oh, you people love passing all of a sudden. We're just going to throw to our running backs, right? It feels like this is a trend that's kind of permeated every single team that we've seen this throughout the league. And Seahawks in particular.
I mean, I think it's really two teams that have said it.
But so do you think this is because there's a perception that... And I think the Chiefs actually were probably very good at throwing to running backs.
And the Saints. Like, the best teams in the NFL probably were very good, but that's probably also because they had receiving-minded running backs.
Well, and receiving-minded offenses also.
Like good enough deep offenses that they're clearing out space underneath for their running back.
Then passing-minded offenses. Therefore, the passes to running backs are that much more valuable. I think that NFL teams are very bad at understanding causation. Oh,
I don't think that. I know that.
And the takeaway is always going to be whatever's... I don't want to say... Probably what the easiest takeaway is, right? Not we need to develop an overhaul and have a completely modern passing offense, but instead let's throw to running backs more.
So Brian Schottenheimer after practice on Tuesday said that the goal is to get Chris Carson 50 targets this season, which would be a dramatic increase from last season when
and they specifically said Chris Carson, though, not running backs.
He did specifically say Carson. Yes,
well, take that, fantasy football players, if you're worried about Rashad Penny climbing up the depth chart.
I'm not that concerned about that, but
the number one reason that you should know that Chris Carson is alone at the top of the running back depth chart was that he didn't play in week one of the preseason.
It is an excellent sign. So he had 24 targets last season. So that would be almost double.
Doubling his targets.
Mike Davis, who played as the third down back, had 42 targets.
Oh, really?
and Rashad Penny had 12. I liked, by the way, that they threw a successful screen pass to Rashad Penny last on Thursday. That was always exciting to see.
It did feel like they opened up the offense a little bit more under Paxton Lynch, though.
Did he? Because he only had one target last season? Is that for real?
That has to be wrong. Or maybe he just didn't play that much. So anyway, I don't even remember where I got started with this. Preseason. Oh, not playing players. But to me, like, this is the right way to approach it. Play rookies, play deep depth chart players, don't play starters.
Play Barkevious Mingo deep into the fourth quarter. That was an interesting one.
I
does not seem like he's real secure with the roster spot.
Yeah, that didn't make me feel great about Barkevious' roster spot.
The other injury the Seahawks did come out, well, I guess, I mean, the Geno Smith injury was going in. The injury that came out of this game with, notably, was George Fant, who's expected to miss a couple of weeks with a grade 2 ankle sprain.
George Fant in the preseason. Why?
Sucks.
On the whole, though, second half on, I got pretty fired up about a preseason safety.
Oh, you gotta love a preseason safety. One of the notable things is that Seahawks were blitzy a lot in this game, which teams are not very good at handling in week 2 of the preseason.
No, yeah, it's definitely one of those things that when you get to the regular season, teams will be better at handling it. And when you look at the quarterback slate that the Seahawks are playing, they're going to be better at handling these blitzes than Drew Locke is going to be.
First off, based on the results of the poll we had on the Peltoncast Twitter last week, we're now calling him Andrew Locke.
Andrew Locke.
People agree that it would make him sound better.
No, Andrew Locke.
Look, hey, one of those guys is playing right now.
You know, the best thing that could happen to Andrew Luck's career would just be to have another massive injury. Anything to make him not have to play.
He was pretty good last year when he played.
He was fine.
The rookie defenders were a big storyline from this preseason opener. Cody Barton playing a lot at linebacker.
Cody Barton's going to be good.
Yeah. He closes ground so quickly. I mean, that's also true of Marquise Blair. It's just that when Marquise Blair gets there, he commits illegal hits.
Marquise Blair is also going to be good.
He'll probably be good, but he's got to figure that out.
If it was one hit, I mean...
He's got to figure that out.
I'm surprised right now in the moment that I'm arguing this otherwise. Like, it wasn't the worst penalty that was ever committed.
No, but it's also not like, you know, oh, this was the one play in his career where he's ever been penalized for an illegal hit. But this also, is someone who got ejected twice last year for targeting.
This was his, including against the Huskies, right?
I believe so, yes.
This was his first ever NFL game. Like, you can't judge. The fact that Marquise Blair was in the right position and making a play is more important than the illegal hit. Like, I think Pete will be very good at cleaning that up. Has Pete ever in his Seahawks tenure had a defensive back that he wasn't able to teach them to make clean hits? Has he ever had a player who consistently made illegal hits?
No, I'm not sure that he's drafted players with that kind of track record necessarily.
You don't think Cam Chancellor had that kind of track record?
I mean, it's tough to say.
You weren't
also
paying
the game
attention
was,
to Virginia Tech, yeah, 2010 football?
I don't remember it off the top of my head.
Or earlier.
Also, the period where he was playing option quarterback for Virginia Tech, he probably wasn't putting a lot of illegal hits then. just clearing guys out of the
block. I can't believe you weren't paying that much attention to future fifth-round picks for the Seahawks in college.
But also, the rules were much different at that point in college football.
What I'm saying is that Pete can clean this up. The Seahawks are good at hitting legally. Because Marquise Blair had an illegal hit in his first ever NFL preseason game, I don't think this makes me concerned about his future career.
It's like, something to watch.
Okay, fine. But the next time that he does it, I guarantee you Pete is not after the game being like, good job, let's learn nothing from this, right?
Probably not.
It was a teachable moment, and it was honestly, I bet Pete was stoked about it as a teachable moment, right? It's the preseason.
Really cool opportunity. I'm jacked about it.
I bet he was jacked about it. He was pumped and jacked about it as a teachable moment, right? Because it's like he made a hit. He was a little bit too aggressive. He hit a player who was defenseless, and Pete can be like, love the aggression, but here's what to do in this situation.
All right, the other topic I wanted to talk about was the battle for playing time at wide receiver. Jazz Ferguson, the standout on Thursday, really showing the catch radius, I would say.
I think Jazz is going to make the team.
I also think so. I mean, John Ursua had that one catch where it looked exactly like Doug Baldwin.
I thought he looked just like Tyler Lockett.
Really?
Was that Ursua? I thought literally just like as he moved, he looks like Tyler Lockett.
No, to me it was all Doug Baldwin. which was exciting to see with Doug Baldwin not out there.
I'm going
to
say like 10 wide receivers are going to make the team. But
it was not a great day for DK Metcalf.
Gary, you know what? He's making the team.
Yeah, I agree.
Why was it not a good day for DK Metcalf, though?
I mean, he just didn't catch that many of the passes thrown to him. He did have a screen pass that he caught that got called back due to where he had made a pretty nice play, but there was an illegal block by the other wide receiver who was out there, who I'm not sure who that was anymore.
I may have fallen asleep during that play.
Oh, no. Gary Jennings hadn't really done much and then apparently had a very good day of practice on Tuesday, and Russell Wilson talked afterwards about how he kind of needed that one.
He's getting cut.
I don't know. He got drafted awfully high.
I mean, what? So did Chris Harper.
Was Chris Harper cut as a rookie?
I think so. Pretty sure he was cut his first year. I'm pretty sure if they could take it back, they'd probably also cut.
What's Amari Darboh?
Yeah, Darbo.
Okay.
It's very difficult to really understand what the receiving core looks like and is going to look like even into week one.
Yeah.
We're going to see a lot of rookie wide receivers catching passes for the Seahawks, which is probably a very bad sign.
It's not the best sign.
Right? Because the depth chart three on, and we don't even really know that David Moore has two secured, is pretty much up in the air for everybody. Even DK is not guaranteed. Like, would it shock you if John Ursua played more throughout the season than DK Metcalf?
No.
At the same time, the things that we learned from DK in this game is DK Metcalf can get open. He can create separation.
Yes.
And that's the catching the ball is probably the most important thing that a wide receiver can do, but it's also a very nice skill to have, especially when you have a quarterback like Russell Wilson passing you the ball. So I think we'll learn a lot from the couple of series that Russ plays this week.
Yeah, that'll be a more interesting setup.
And they're going to pass the ball to DK in those series.
All right, here's the thing. Gary Jennings was drafted much higher than Chris Harper.
Was he?
Three picks.
Oh.
He was number 120. Chris Harper was number 123, and he was cut during training camp.
Yes. This is not, I'm telling you, this is not the team that cares where you were drafted, though.
It's true.
They made a lot of draft picks this year. There are a lot of wide receivers.
They've got so much competition.
Like, if Jazz Ferguson outperforms Gary Jennings, do you think that they're just going to cut Jazz Ferguson and keep Gary Jennings because of where he was drafted?
I don't know that it'll necessarily come down to that particular, you know.
Well, same with John Ursua. John Ursua was drafted three rounds later than Gary Jennings, right?
Yeah. They also do very different things.
It is pretty frustrating looking around the league and seeing all of the wide receivers who the Seahawks could have drafted in sort of that second, third round area. Basically, people raving about every single one of them.
I mean, people rave about a lot of people during the preseason.
Okay.
There's Malik Turner, who I finished binging All or Nothing, the Carolina Panthers 2018 season on Amazon Prime last week, and there was Malik Turner making a crucial catch in that game. One of his two catches of the 2018 season.
Ever on the Panthers?
No, he was on the Seahawks.
Oh, he was on the Seahawks.
Against the Panthers.
He was on the Seahawks last year.
Yeah.
Oh, well, good for Malik.
So basically what I'm saying is there's a lot of guys at wide receiver.
There are a lot of guys at wide receiver. Very few of them are proven. But at the same time, during the Paxton Lynch series, I thought the offense was that much more open. It was in the first half, I was just like, it felt like watching the first half of a Seahawks game from 2018, and it hurt.
Yeah, but maybe that's also got something to do with the Seahawks always. I mean, I guess the numbers don't actually bear this out, but the Seahawks always played badly in the first half.
I mean, it like watching it, it's just like, oh, fuck. I was just like, I don't want to watch this offense again.
Oh, don't you like to see a bunch of Jason Myers 55-yard plus field goals?
Oh, my God. I almost had a bit of like schadenfreude about it. I kind of wanted him to miss the second one.
Oh.
Just, I don't even know why. Like, I was like, every bad part of my being came out there. And just being like, it would be kind of funny if he missed the second one. Right? That the Seahawks committed this much money to a kicker and having him miss his first two field goals. You don't think it would have been a little bit funny?
No, I don't think so.
It was a brutal first half. You didn't watch the first half, or did you go back and watch it later?
I watched everything on DVR.
It was just a brutal first half to watch. And like the feelings that I felt were like week one and two of the 2018 NFL season. I was just like, I can't do this again. I'm going to turn on Mina Kimes.
Well,
I was like, they got Mina Kimes and Nate Burleson in the booth. Sign me up.
Shoddy wants you to experience it again and again.
Oh, God.
On that note.
Thanks for listening. Should we talk about this upcoming game?
Wait, I mean, what you're looking for? I guess I don't know.
Was there anything else from when the Seahawks play the Vikings on Sunday? Which also, Sunday preseason games, kind of strange.
Well, it's the national game.
So they are doing on Fox.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So it's like a Sunday night football, but it's on Fox.
Yes.
All right. Do they do a preseason Monday night football?
There's preseason games on ESPN. I don't think that they're on Monday night.
Okay. So after this last week, I mean, it's probably more of the same, but things are going to start being decided a little bit more here. Can Paxton Lynch claim the backup quarterback job?
I don't think he's going to have that opportunity here.
You don't think so?
I mean, first off, this is one of the things I harp on every year. We see four preseason games. Mm-hmm. The coaches see four preseason games and like 30 practices. Mm-hmm. So those practices aren't necessarily like worth as much as a preseason game, but there's a lot more of them. Yes. So even if you think that each of them is worth 20% as much as a preseason game, the practices are still worth more than the game. And we don't, like, obviously some people, you know, the media sees many of the practices, fans see some of them early in training camp when they're open. They're now past that portion. But, like, people, it's a classic case of the Daniel Kahneman theory of what you see is all there is. Mm-hmm. So people treat the preseason games as the only thing that go into this decision because that's all they are able to see. Mm-hmm. But that's not all that goes into that decision.
Okay.
So I think, and I think Geno Smith was ahead of Paxton Lynch going into that game, which is why he started the game.
Yes. Well, I mean, I guess if you want to make this argument.
So like, I think Geno Smith, I mean, I don't know how much Paxton Lynch has closed the gap. I don't know if he's actually moved ahead in the battle. But no, I don't think that Paxton Lynch can end the battle in week two of the preseason.
There's also, I mean, wow.
No, I mean, he just, I mean, look, like, okay, if he goes out there and throws for like 350 yards, it's like 20 for 20 for 350 yards, sure.
The Seahawks would never pass 20 times. all passes to running backs. there's also, I mean, years of history for both of them beyond this preseason.
Yeah.
Geno Smith has played NFL games. He's started NFL games. He's gone into seasons as an NFL starter, right?
That is accurate.
And I suppose maybe Paxton Lynch has gone an NFL season. Paxton Lynch
has been on an NFL roster.
It feels like the difference between them is Geno Smith is a known commodity.
Yes.
And Paxton Lynch, he's still so young and has so little NFL experience that I don't believe that Paxton Lynch is a known commodity necessarily. And like the variability with Paxton Lynch is extremely high. But also the Seahawks.
He's also not that young, by the way. He's 25.
That's young.
That's not that young.
How old is Geno Smith?
I mean, he's a lot older than 25, but I mean,
Paxton Lynch has like 2 years of NFL experience, right?
Yes.
That's young in terms of quarterbacks played.
How old do you think Geno Smith is?
29.
28.
Russell Wilson's like deceptively 35 years old.
Apparently his hairline is.
Russell Wilson is a lot older than we think he is. But the Seahawks don't need a quarterback who has high variability. I mean, that's why they cut Alex Magoo last year, right? Like having a high variability backup quarterback for the Seahawks. I'm talking myself out of Paxton Lynch. I didn't believe this would happen.
Wow.
Having a high variability backup quarterback is not that big of a deal to them though, no, right?
Because it's not like they're going to make them the starter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like even if Paxton Lynch is the next Jimmy Garoppolo or whatever, right? Like the chances of teams even seeing that, teams have probably already made up their minds about Paxton Lynch. And the best thing that you could have would be like high draft pedigree plus a couple of good preseason games and just enough chatter for people to say that you're really good.
Yeah.
And I think Paxton Lynch is probably, teams have probably already made up their mind about him in as much as that even if he has an amazing preseason, we're still not getting a second round pick for Paxton Lynch.
No.
So I guess somehow I've talked myself out of Paxton Lynch. But beyond that, just everybody needs to stay healthy. I am curious with the wide receivers, though, because I think the depth chart is wide open. David Moore down.
Yeah.
Including David Moore.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, nothing about his performance in that game and last season suggests to me that we're confident with him as the number two receiver going forward.
Agreed.
So I'm fascinated to see that. Would love to see, is Will Thrill Disley going to play or no?
Could play. Sounds okay. Like he probably will.
Okay. Would love to see how he looks health-wise. But in general, just get out of this game healthy. As with every preseason game, just get through it.
On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.